Would you put this in the middle?
Sure.
The TAC members and then other members of the public. Jesse Blow.
Eric Tao.
Lydia Tam.
Whitney Jones.
Dan Adams.
Terrence Madero.
Emily Johnstone.
And so we have a quorum of the committee. We're going to be joined in a minute by Mr. Chamberlain. Staff or consulting team could introduce themselves next.
Good evening. Brian Sparkman, Century Urban.
Leo Ma, Century Urban.
Matt Newman, Blue Sky Consulting Group.
Rick Jacobus, Street Level Advisors.
Any staff or members of the public who would like to introduce themselves? Jacob Edlund, say my name.
Emily Lasky.
Charles Shin, Prado Group.
Corey Smith, San Francisco Housing Coalition.
Also, Lead Director of Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development.
Another one here with the Council of Community Housing Organizations.
Christy Wong-Musker.
Welcome, Supervisor.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
So let's move on. We have a quorum, so let's move on to item number two. It's approval of the minutes from the prior meeting.
I motion to approve.
Second.
Any public comment? Seeing none, we close public comment. Seeing no objections. Approved. So I'll turn it over to Ted now to introduce the heart of the matter tonight, which is we had a couple of lingering issues from phase one of the study. We had a meeting about 6 weeks ago now, and we have some proposed recommendations put in front of the TAC for discussion.
Thank you, Ben, and welcome back, everyone. When we left last meeting, or at the last meeting, we reviewed some in-room fees that would be equivalent to the on-site percentages that this group endorsed last fall. And we and our consultants went back and did more research on what specifically bonus units could bear in terms of a higher requirement under a density bonus scenario. You'll remember we were going back and forth on whether or not we would, or how to handle the fact that a higher percentage on bonus units could make projects infeasible, but on the other hand, Century Urban's initial research found that they were able to support a higher fee. So Century Urban and the Blue Sky was doing some additional research on that. We also had some internal discussions with the city attorney's office, which led us to what we think is a resolution of the state density bonus issue in a way that hasn't required us to produce any additional research. To walk through that, which basically leads us to our final recommendations, which we would ask the TAC to endorse tonight, I'm going to turn it over to Rick Jacobus, who's been facilitating the meeting to brief you.
Before we get to Rick, if I could briefly welcome Supervisor Kim, one of the sponsors of the legislation that creates the TAC itself. And Supervisor Erna, if you have any comments you'd like to make.
Well, actually, I was just telling Ben I came to say thank you to the TAC for your many hours of meeting and negotiating and thinking and brainstorming. I really do appreciate, you know, where we're at this point right now. I know many of you know I've introduced an ordinance with Supervisor Peskin. Actually, Sunny's going to be joining us from his office soon in December, and we will be introducing substitute legislation that's going to put a lot more flesh onto what we are proposing that will be our inclusionary policy. But, you know, over the last couple of months, I've actually been really pleased to see a lot of the concepts and ideas that have come forward. I really appreciate that everyone in the room wants to help build more affordable housing through our private sector community, and it's just really great to see the ideas that move forward. But I just really appreciate all the time that everyone has put into it, and I look forward to the final outcome, hopefully over the next couple of months. And thank you to the Comptroller's Office for facilitating this hot-button issue.
Of course.
And I have to just say, you know, we're always trying to ask departments to help us facilitate things, and it's very hard to find someone who's willing to do it. So we appreciate your work.
Thank you for the volunteer effort.
No sarcasm.
Thank you, sir. That was very flatly listened. With that, I'll turn it back to Rick.
Thank you, Ben. So I wanted to start by just really quickly recapping the recommendations that we settled on in the previous round. And if you have the PowerPoint deck, it's slide 3. So in September, we issued a sort of preliminary report, and we had these 5 recommendations, and they were to have separate requirements for ownership and rental projects, to have the on-site requirements, we set a range. We didn't recommend a specific requirement. We recommended a range between 17 and 20% for ownership and between 14 and 18% for rental. That the range would be the beginning of a process of stepping up the requirements regularly, and we recommended half a percentage point annual increase in each from wherever you start in that range each year over 15 years. So that over time, the requirements would be significantly higher, but the land market would have time to adjust, and we'd have some time for economic cycles to transpire. We also discussed the fact that the higher requirements might result in more 80-20 type bond finance deals, and we agreed that it would make sense to have higher inclusionary requirements for those deals, but that the city has the ability to negotiate for that when they're approving the bond financing. So we wrote that in the previous report. And we left 4 things for further research in phase 2. And so what we're hoping to do tonight is sort of resolve those 4 issues. And they were the density bonus, which will be hopefully the bulk of our conversation tonight, and then the income limit question that Ted was just describing that we talked about last time. And the other one that we talked about last time was the fee equivalency for the fee option. What if this is the range for the on-site requirements, what's the range for the fee option? And then the 4th one, which we did not do additional analysis around, was when should the affordable requirements kick in the development process? When do you lock in your rate or rates? So if you turn to the next page, I want to just sort of recap what we think the recommendations are for the 3 issues that aren't the density bonus, and then move into the density bonus. So if you remember last time, we talked about the possibility of if you choose the low end of the recommended range, at least for rental projects, that would mean that the required, the split in Prop C was 60% low income, 40% moderate income. And if you implemented that at the low end of that range, the low income unit requirement would be below what it had been before Prop C. So we reanalyzed the economics to try to see what that would mean. What Century Urban determined was that the 14% for rental was equivalent to, split 60-40, was equivalent economically to a 12% low-income requirement and no moderate-income requirement. And so what we're proposing to do is to write in the final report to summarize that analysis, but not to make a recommendation one way or another about what the right policy is, but so that if the policymakers choose the low end, they would be informed that that was the economic equivalent and that they could choose to select that 12% instead of the 14% split 50-50. Let me mention all 3 of these and then ask for questions. So then the on the fees, we did the analysis of what is the economic impact on the project of providing the affordable on-site units within the range, right, at each point in the range that we recommended. And the if you recall, Century Urban's pro forma analysis was sort of based on the residual land value given a fixed expectation for return on the project. And what they did is they then backed in to the same impact on land value under the fee scenario. And what they were able to do with that was to come up with a recommended range for the fee that corresponds to the recommended range for the on-site units. And the idea is that at the, if the rental requirement is 14 to 18%, somewhere in that range, then the fee that would correspond to that would be 18 to 23%, right? So 18 would correspond to 14 and 23 would correspond to 18. And similarly, for ownership, the range for the fees would be 25 to 28%. And at those equivalencies, they get the same net impact on the project's profitability or the residual land value from those projects. So what we're suggesting is that tonight, at the end of the meeting, that we take a vote on that recommendation, that we consider recommending that same sort of fee range for the project, or for the that same range for the fees. The TAC early on discussed the need for, if we're increasing the requirements annually, it creates a problem which probably we have even if we don't increase the fees, the requirements regularly, which is developers need to know with some certainty when they start into a project that what their requirements are going to be when they're actually, you know, putting the project on the market. And so in the past, as the policymakers have adapted the program, there's been this sort of grandfathering, but there's kind of a lot of verbiage involved in writing the regulation for the grandfathering. So what we had discussed was the need for a clear trigger for when a project qualifies at a particular level and how long they have to hold on to that qualification, and after which they have to then use the then current requirements, right? And we did not develop a recommendation for exactly what those triggers would be, and so what we're proposing to do is in our report to reflect the need for that, but to leave it up to the policymakers to choose what the point is and what the length of time is. So let me stop with those three and just see if there are questions about that, and then at the end we'll come back and we'll sort of vote on these recommendations. But are there questions about sort of what we've done so far in this phase? Yeah, Eric.
For your first bullet point, when you did the study, what did you use for your AMI for the median income? I don't remember.
What was the actual median?
What was the AMI level that you used? Low, I presume, was 55% AMI.
Oh, yeah, so it's 55 for rental and 90 for ownership.
For low.
Right. For low. And then for median, it's 80, or middle, and median income is 80 for rental and 120 for ownership.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And just generally as a reminder for everyone regarding kind of the income limit splits, we had talked along earlier in this process that the TAC, we're not actually asking the TAC to make a recommendation about specific AMI mixes in a final policy. Rather, we want to highlight that the base recommendation has an assumption baked into it, and as that assumption changes at the next phase of this process, that it affects feasibility and providing some context for that. So.
And Eric, I just said it wrong. So it's the moderate income units for rental are at 100.
100.
Yeah.
100, not 80?
Yeah.
I agree. We're not going to recommend, but it's important to know how did they get to the
absolutely
12%, what was the assumptions. So,
right. In terms of the vesting, is it open for discussion whether the TAC can make a recommendation? Because
yeah.
I think we had a lot of discussion about that in prior meetings, and
sure.
I certainly have a strong opinion about that. So,
yeah, if you're okay with it, what I'd like to do is talk about the density bonus and see where we are time-wise, and then have the vesting conversation at the end.
It might be helpful just to mention here that as part of this, because I think this might come up in later items, you know, we're trying to get to a point now where we're offering kind of a base analytics and of recommendations to policymakers for the next phase of the process. Is clearly a legislative cycle that needs to begin, where a lot of more detailed questions are coming up. We've been imagining that would be put in that bucket. There may be other issues we talk about that we think belong there, but absolutely, when we come back to it later,
okay.
If you disagree with kind of our assessment of what belongs there versus now,
yeah, my only comment when you talk about it is it's such an important issue that I would hate to not at least discuss whether we can make a recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a question on the equivalent fees. Does that have anything to do with sort of the offsite option, or is this just a different math problem?
The most logical structure, and the structure that was sort of in both pre-propsy and post-propsy, is that would be both the offsite requirement and the fee requirement.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, let's talk about the density bonus. So just to recap the challenge that we were facing at the end of the last meeting, we talked at some length in the last meeting and I believe the meeting before about the density bonus and how the state density bonus would impact the feasibility of inclusionary in San Francisco. And the particularly sticky challenge is that we don't have a source of data that helps us determine what the likely utilization of the density bonus would be. And that wouldn't have been such a problem if you were all in agreement about what was likely to happen, but there was a significant disagreement amongst the TAC members about what some people felt the density bonus was going to be universally utilized, and others felt that it wasn't a safe assumption that everyone was going to, that anyone was going to use it, and there was certainly a lot of examples given of projects that might not be able to use it. So that makes it very difficult to set the on-site requirement in a way that anticipates the use of the bonus. And just to cast it in the most challenging terms, if you assume that no one is going to use the bonus and you set the on-site requirement on that basis, you at whatever is sort of maximally feasible without the bonus, then projects that get the bonus get what feels to some like a windfall, right? They're providing less than they economically could. The flip side is if we assume that everyone is going to use the bonus, we could actually support a much higher base requirement for inclusionary. And the problem then is if you have a project where you're not able to use the bonus, your inclusionary requirement was set assuming that you could, and your project may not be feasible as a result. And so I think we all felt a little bit stuck based on that, you know, that choice, that neither option seemed like a good one. And splitting the difference gives us some of each of those two problems, but doesn't solve either of them. So what we're wanting to do tonight is to propose a different approach entirely that I want to say I think doesn't solve that problem, but it takes that problem and it puts it in a much smaller box. And hopefully it's so much smaller that we're all able to live with it.
No. Yes, no. But go ahead.
Okay. Hopefully it's so much smaller that many of us are able to live with it. So the first thing to say is the state density bonus law fairly clearly states that we can't require affordable units on the bonus units, that we can't have an on-site requirement that's higher if you take the density bonus. And that's the source of that struggle, right? But it doesn't say that we can't charge impact fees or other fees. And we charge a set of normal fees based on any project. And the expectation and the way the density bonus seems to have been playing out in other cities is that the fees that are charged normally for development are charged on a square footage basis, including the bonus density. And so if it's a park fee or a school fee, we wouldn't expect the project to necessarily be exempt from paying that fee. So San Francisco's inclusionary requirement is in fact not an on-site requirement, it's a fee requirement. Developers are required to pay a fee. Some projects have the option to provide on-site or off-site units, but not every project even has that option. The fee is the requirement. So the proposal that we have is to, and the current planning code allows developers to mix, to have some project, some of their satisfaction of the requirement be in the form of on-site performance and some in the form of fee. And so what we're suggesting is that we could allow developers with density bonus projects to provide the on-site units based on the base units in their project, the same number that they would have provided if they didn't use the density bonus, and for the density bonus to pay the fee at the same rate that they would have had to pay it if they paid the fee on the whole project. So notice that nobody's going to be able to get the state density bonus if they only pay the fee. They have to combine both on-site units and the fee. But if they combine those two things, we end up with an approach that lets us get the units that we would have gotten but not get nothing for the bonus. And so we have an example, and I just want to walk through the example and then make sure people understand it, and then we'll have time to discuss is it a good idea or not. So slide six, I guess. So imagine a 100 unit condo project, and there's a unit mix, studios, one bedrooms, two bedrooms. If, let's say, we set within our range, we chose that the for sale requirement would be 17% on-site and 25% if you choose the fee option. Those are the equivalents that we had before. You could choose any other point in our range, but that, just as our example. So in that case, a 100-unit project would have to provide 17 BMR units if they chose the on-site option. And if they chose the off-site option, using the 2016 MoCD fee schedule, they pay $6.9 million in fee. Does everyone understand that?
Mm-hmm.
So the next slide.
Clarifying, seven, these are bedrooms, right? I was asking what it is.
The 198, 268.
Yeah.
So based on bedrooms.
Based on bedrooms, exactly. Okay. Right. So that's the studio. 198 is the per studio unit fee. The per one bedroom and per two bedroom fee. The fee is different based on the units, and so you take your same proportion that you have in your project and you calculate the fee based on that. So on slide seven, if the way we were talking about it last month when we met, if the project took the density bonus, now instead of 100 units, let's say they got a 35% bonus, they'd have 135 units, and now but if we can't require extra on-site affordable units, they'd still only provide 17 BMR units if they did the on-site options. But now instead of 83 units, they'd have 118 market rate units. So their inclusionary requirement is essentially much lower if they do it that way. And if they did the fee, they wouldn't be able to get the bonus, right? So they'd have to do the on-site units in order to do the bonus. So what we're proposing is on slide eight, which is this option three, which is they take the bonus, 35 bonus units, and they provide the same 17% that they would have provided if they just did the base project. But in addition, they provide $2.4 million in fee. And that's calculated just by applying the same fee schedule that we already have to the additional bonus units based on their bedroom sizes. So you see that calculation there? So I want to pause there and see if people understand the proposal. Questions about how that would work?
I have a beautiful question. I was going to ask this question because I got the PowerPoint presentation. So the way you read the state density bonus program,
Yeah, let me. I'm going to turn this, kick this back to Ben, but let me first say, the consultant team that you've engaged is not providing or qualified to provide a legal opinion. We're simply showing you how this would work.
Our collective read of this, and we have talked about this with the city attorney's office, is that we can assess a fee on the bonus units in the same way that we have a downtown park fee, transportation sustainability fee, we have planning fees, building inspection fees, and others.
Okay, so it won't get defined as requiring more affordable housing?
Correct. It's just another impact fee that applies to the bonus units in exactly the same way that it applies to the base units. And so we have reviewed that with the attorney.
It does seem that we can't charge a higher fee for the bonus units. So the idea is that we charge the same fee that we would charge any other unit, that it's no different. They're not being disadvantaged by taking advantage of the bonus, but they're not being advantaged either. Other questions?
So are you saying that we've been using the fee as a misnomer? Because we've been calling the
yes.
fee in lieu.
We have done that, and that
well,
has on-site
been is really the in lieu.
On-site is the in lieu, yes.
So we've been using it backwards.
Yes. Yeah, and historically, San Francisco had the on-site requirement as the requirement first, and after the Palmer decision, the city switched the legal rationale to what's called a fee-first program. So the city's requirement now is a fee, payment of a fee, and the units are inland here. And we shouldn't call it an inland fee.
I'm sure you've already asked this question. If the on-site is in lieu, and the fee is a fee, if it's in lieu, how is that in violation of the density bonus program? Because you're not requiring additional on-site. I'm opting for the in lieu to do it on-site.
I can't answer that. I think it's safe to say no one has the definitive answer on exactly what will or won't be clearly considered legal in the long-term future. There's going to be additional case law on this question over time, and it's unlikely that anyone knows exactly how to interpret the specifics of
it's probably safer to just keep it as fee only instead of saying you still have the in lieu option for the density units to do it on site.
That's the advice you're getting, yeah.
Got it. But I mean, I can see the argument why if it's a fee only and it's in lieu, that you could support doing the on site for the density bonus program units too, right?
Yep.
Academic. But.
I think you could make that argument, but that argument hasn't carried the day.
I understand. So I would opt to be on the safer side, because we are kind of threading a needle here.
Yeah, and the language, if you read the state law, the language is not as clear as you'd like it to be. It's really, it's sort of clear what they're trying to do, but the words that they use really matter, and they're not very clear, so it leaves a lot of room for interpretation, which makes it difficult.
Okay, makes sense to me.
Other questions? Okay, I want to raise one more aspect of this just before we discuss the pros and cons of it. But if you look at slide 9, I said at the beginning that this doesn't entirely solve the problem that we started with. It just puts it in a smaller box. And so if you remember the analysis that the consulting team did about the maximum economic value showed that, yeah, in fact, the density bonus projects could support much higher requirements. And this approach doesn't fully maximize, doesn't capture all of that potential value. They did a back of the envelope calculation, and the estimate is that what we've done here captures 80% of the economic benefit of the increase. Do you want to clarify that?
I do want to clarify that 80% applies to condominiums.
For condominiums, right? So we're capturing, and it's, realistically different for every actual project and different depending on where we are in the range as well. But the idea is that we're not, this proposal doesn't capture all of the potential benefit of the density bonus. So what it might mean is that if everyone uses the density bonus, it would create upward pressure on land prices, and you'd see landowners realizing some of the value of the density bonus. But 80% is so far from where we were at 0% that we're happy with the recommendation.
What's the reason? I don't quite understand the reason why the
because
not commensurate.
Because if you have a density bonus unit, there the analysis assumes no extra cost for land, right? So what a project that's paying for land can afford per unit is somewhat lower than what a project that has free land can afford for a unit. So the density bonus units are assumed to, exist on a site that's paying for land based on the per unit cost of the base unit. Does that make sense? The base.
Assuming
project.
The seller hasn't already priced in the.
Assuming the seller
of the density
hasn't
bonus,
priced in. Exactly.
Sellers are incredibly, unfortunately, very smart in San Francisco. So I just don't quite understand. I can see an argument that there's some efficiency of the extra units because you have certain fixed costs.
If nothing else, don't we imagine the land is a fixed cost over the price of a project, regardless of how large it is, if we're taking a view that it's priced in?
The numbers that we looked at last time. The numbers that we looked at last time set the upper bound of what you could possibly capture from a project. And the assumption is that, and I'm not saying it's a realistic assumption, you can debate that amongst yourselves, but the assumption was that if the inclusionary requirement is set, assuming full utilization of the bonus, landowners see that as well, and that affects the bid for land. And so if you knew everyone was going to take the full bonus, you could set the requirement in such a way that essentially none of the value fell to the land. And that would be the number that you saw at the far end of the charts last time. And I'm just acknowledging that this approach doesn't get us to that far end. It gets us to something like 80%. Yeah.
I have a question. This 14 to 18% range for on-site, 18 to 23% range for the equivalent fees, they're not linked, right? I could say, and you could defend, as feasible, we go 14% on-site and 23% fees.
You could,
right? Because it's a range.
But
we're not doing exact science. Why does it need to be linked? I guess I want to understand what kind of. Obviously,
sure.
Politicians can do whatever they want. Supervisors can do whatever they want. But. I just want to understand the flexibility. Is it written in stone that if you choose 14% on-site, you must choose 18% equivalent
fee? That's your proposal.
No, that's not written in stone. That's our proposal.
That's the
results of the analysis.
I could make a logical leap and say I choose 14% on-site within the range and choose 23% for equivalent fee.
You mean if you're the supervisor making the law?
Correct.
Yeah, supervisors
would be
have that freedom.
Arguably driving more people to choose the inclusionary option.
That's or I could be arguably saying that I'm still within the law of the density program.
I think
I'm enforcing the fee. I'm not going to be positive.
Oh, I see what you're saying. In the context of the density bonus?
But if you're not going to take the density bonus, then all the non-density bonus projects.
I just want to understand what the studies are saying.
That's right.
If we can make the logic.
But you can't have a different, what I understand legally is you couldn't have a different fee
depending on.
Depending on whether you're taking the density bonus.
I just want to see from this study if you could make the logical leap to saying because it's a range.
Yeah, I see where you're going.
I could pick 20% for equivalent fees, which is tantamount to roughly 15% on site. Because it's squishy, right?
Yeah.
You haven't locked it.
Let me give you a number that'll help you talk about it. Prior to Prop C, the requirement was 12% on site and 20% off site, and that was a 66% premium for off siter fee. You pay 1.6 times as much, right? Your 20% rate is much higher than 12%. At Prop C, they kept the same 8 percentage point difference, so now it's 25 and 33, but that difference is now a 32% premium. So they cut in half how much extra you have to provide if you choose the fee option. And I think that happened because they're really, it's very hard to talk about these things, and so they kept the same number and it has a different meaning. So one shorthand is to just talk about what's the premium that you have to pay if you choose to do the fee or the offsite. How much extra do you have to provide?
Yeah, I'm just trying to stay within the boundaries of our job, which is to determine what's feasible.
Yeah.
And again, what I'm reading is what's feasible is between 14 and 18% on-site, 18 and 23% equivalent fees. And because it's a range, it doesn't exactly have to be. If it's 14, it's got to be 18.
Yeah, it
if it's 15,
in other words, the policymakers could pick.
Right.
Yeah. As a matter of
they could pick my preferred number for the inclusionary of 16, and a higher fee percentage, and it may incentivize people that are not using the density bonus to use the inclusionary rather than the fee. If you're a purely rational economic actor. But it might pick up some of that supposed
that's my point.
80%. You could get that other 20% because you have a higher fee on the density bonus.
The windfall that you guys are seeing, let's say he's right with the 16%. So theoretically, the 16% would translate to a 20% fee. Mm-hmm. But if we charge 23, you erode the windfall.
You could totally as long as you're applying the fee.
They could do it and you could recommend
equally.
It.
Equally, they could choose a higher fee.
Yeah, correct.
It might make Olson unhappy because he might get less.
He'll be happy. He might get more fee.
But he'll get more units.
Everyone does it.
And just to make sure everyone's on the same page, the range that the equivalency that's recommended is basically for ownership 1.4.
Right.
So that they've said at 1.4 in their model for ownership, the developer has the same hit. It's the same very roughly. It's
what do you mean 1.4?
At if the fee. Whether it's 14% or 18%, if the fee is 1.4 times the on-site requirement, it's going to cost the developer roughly the same as providing on-site. That doesn't require the policy to set that. You could say we want it to cost twice as much, but that's the equivalency. Okay, so I want to open it up to comments on this. I mean, we've already started moving this. What do other people think about this approach to the density bonus question?
I want to know if it was 80% for sale, what the number was for rental.
Yeah, she asked if it was 80% of the value captured on for sale, what percent does it capture on rental?
So the value recapture is in the 72 to 74% range for multifamily apartments versus residential condominiums, I'm sure around the 80% range.
At what fee percentage?
Looking at kind of the pre-density bonus relative to the post density bonus maximum bookend. So what we're trying to kind of describe here is, well, if you look at the value of recapture mechanisms, is this akin to what we're seeing in other area plans? Is this a fair value recapture? And so I think if you just look at those percentages, I think the consensus is, it's a little more than what the value recapture with the way we're looking at relative to other area plans.
But maybe I misunderstood. What I heard was if you use 25%, as a fee for the density bonus, you're only recapturing 80% of the value for the condos.
For the condos,
But if you went
17% inclusionary, 25% fee.
But if you went to, let's say, 26% fee, you would obviously recapture like 90%, right? You would recapture
higher,
more.
Higher.
I just want to understand how this thing works.
So presumably that would be how it works.
The bigger the fee, the more capture.
Again, as long as they're not linked, you could kind of.
Right.
Okay.
So as an example, if you could support, you know, $5 a foot pre-density bonus, how much is the maximum bookend that you could support with the full density bonus? And maybe that's $8. Maybe it's $10. So going from 5 to 10, yeah, you're basically going to 7. So there's 30% in this case would be inward to the landowner versus the remainder would go to the public benefits.
Okay. Thank
you. Other comments on this approach? What do people think?
Doesn't work for some of us.
Let's hear it.
It's got multiple flaws. As you admit, it doesn't recapture all the value the bonus confers. And what makes that really obvious is your example. So we look at your option three. So for an addition, for paying a fee of $2.4 million and change, a developer gets, in this example, 35 more market units, which if you divide, you know, the 2.4 by 35 means it's just costing them about $7,000 to get another market unit in their project, compared, that's opportunity cost, I guess you'd call it, compared to if you're buying land to build, you're willing to pay $200,000 to build a market unit. So there's obviously a dramatic incentive for every developer to use all
the bonus. But John, I'm not following your math. It doesn't cost you $200,000 per market unit. It costs you $200,000 per quarter of a market unit.
No. If you're buying land.
You're
buying land per door. You know, we've been told repeatedly folks pay up to $200,000 a door. Okay? That's what we've been told.
But not under this affordable policy.
I understand. But I mean, today, just, you know, looking at today's realities, right? People are willing to pay, willing to pay that much. And now, just for basically an extra $70,000 per door, if you use the bonus to the max, you get a market unit. Mm-hmm. So it's clear that everybody, you'd be crazy not to use the bonus to the max possible. You'd be insane not to take, you know, for $70,000. I mean, yes, I know some projects cannot use all 35%. I get that. But those that can would, and if somewhat less, you run numbers, and it'll be similar outcome. We're not recapturing enough of the bonus value with this approach. The other flaw, as you pointed out, is landowners are smart, and of course will figure out how much more they can ask for the land to recapture the value of the density bonus. I mean, the question on the table is, who's going to recapture the value of the density bonus, right? Does it go to public purposes, or does it go to landowner profits, or for lucky developers who already own the site, you know, they actually come out, the developer comes out ahead for folks in that particular situation at the moment. So as you know, we have a counterproposal, which is instead to set the...
Chair, I'm sorry.
Huh?
You said as you know, I thought maybe there was something that was
saying. Everybody knows, we talked about it last month. To set the general requirement at a higher percentage of 25 and now 24%, and then discount it proportionally for projects that don't use the density bonus down to a floor than our proposal, 18%. And
that's the fee.
Well, yes. No. Because if you set the requirement for every project in town. At a certain number, it applies to every project in town. In case of the state bonus, technically just the base units, not the bonus units, right? You remember?
Yeah.
But then if you proportionally take it down step by step for how much of the bonus you don't use, you get down to the same equivalent, you know, number as 17 or 18, and we're proposing 18 instead of 17. That's our proposal. The advantage of that is, of course, it equalizes the finances of the projects as best we can. It means there is no added land value coming out of this system. The land value is whatever it is, but it, you know, one way or another, the land value is equalized. The developers will actually, because they have a bigger project, they will actually make more cash in absolute dollars. Although their percentage return would probably be, you know, not affected. That's the idea. It's important to us also that as projects come forward, whether or not it should be what the base zoning allows or 35% taller or whatever, those are the kind of issues that should be discussed project by project. It involves design questions. It involves neighborhood character questions. There's no one rule fits all for every neighborhood. And this system is flexible. It doesn't bias the decision either way. All right, it doesn't bias decision to no bonus, and it doesn't bias decision to any or all bonus, right? And so that issue is discussed and decided on as particular merits in that particular community. We think equalizing the impact of the bonus is the right way to go, and we think we have a way to do it. The city attorney has not yet given us a reading on it, or at least their clients on the Board of Supervisors have not yet got a reading on it. If their clients in the mayor's office did, then that was not appropriate, since the city attorney has to treat all parties the same that they represent. So I'm sure no one has a reading on it yet. The person who would evaluate it is going to be addressing it in coming weeks.
Ben, did you want to address that?
Just if so, if I understand, I don't recall this well from last time, but I think it challenges part of the conversation we've had with the city attorney's office and with council generally, which is that attaching a unique value or fee to the bonus units that differentiates them from the base units creates legal problems. And so I certainly haven't run the specific proposal by them, but that is a kind of core concept that we reviewed with council that has been, which is frankly one of the reasons we end up with a requirement that applies equally to all units in the building.
I'm sure they haven't told you something they haven't told their other clients.
Can I ask a question, just John?
So, if they haven't told their other clients what they've told you, that's a different problem. But
I'm not part of those conversations. None of us are. So.
I'm very far removed from my legal days, but. Just thinking of simple language, which is the density bonus cannot cause greater inclusionary on-site.
That's right.
It does sound like your program.
No.
If it's equitable, it's fine with us. It alone is equitable, but it does seem to run afoul of that law.
No, it does.
Because by opting out of it, you can have less. It does seem like a backdoor way of creating more on-site using a density bonus program.
By opting out of it, it's the city's discretion to reduce the requirement. There, as was said, you said earlier, the new state law is not, you know, thoroughly drafted to address all possible situations. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's no case law in it at all, right?
Can I just briefly to ask?
Yeah, I want to clear up, as someone who is the client of the city attorney and has gotten lots of advice from them over the years, I think you've gotten it wrong, John. Anybody can go to the city attorney, any client, mayor's office, planning department, board member, and ask verbally for a read, hey, can we do this, can we not do this? That doesn't have to be shared with anyone else. If we ask them for it in writing, it gets shared. When we're drafting legislation, we have a conversation. We say, what about this? And frankly, what you proposed was what about in these conversations? And they say, no, you can't do that. That's not required to be shared with anyone else. I want the TAC members to understand how it actually works. When there's a memo formally drafted by the city attorney, then it is certainly available to all of their clients.
We don't actually know if you asked the question the right way to start with.
I don't know either.
Okay.
But are you suggesting that it has been asked the right way and that a memo will be forthcoming?
All I can say is that when it's been asked by other clients, the city attorney, the answer is, we don't know, we have to evaluate this.
And you weren't in those conversations either, just to be clear.
No, but that's, I know where it stood.
We have to be careful here about how we talk about these issues in this setting. Mm-hmm. I wonder whether there is a way that we can caveat our recommendation as working fundamentally with an assumption that legally we cannot attach additional or differential fees or requirements.
I don't think you can go there. We, as you said, there is no on-the-record answer to this question. And this is an on-the-record public discussion.
Okay,
so it just don't go there.
I'm personally interested in not having any more of those meetings for a while, making a recommendation. And what we do know, I think, is we have a structure that does pass legal muster. And I think my colleague here to my left seemed to be heading in the direction of...
Everybody on that side.
Hang on.
he is on my left, literally and figuratively, potentially advising the board that they have the ability to choose a higher fee, I think, which I think is an interesting route to take if it turns out this alternative approach does, in fact, not pass legal muster. I'm certainly uncomfortable endorsing a recommendation that we know is potentially not legal. I mean, I just think that doesn't, I'm not comfortable doing that.
Well, and so, I don't, to be clear, I haven't talked about John's specific proposal, and I don't know that others have either, so.
Yeah, but I guess just from my own perspective on this right now, I think, for one, I think it's important for us to wrap up this phase of the work. Two, generally, I've felt like let's not let the perfect be the enemy of the good and get something moving. There's gonna be a process at the board that's gonna take all sorts of twists and turns, and the city attorney will be involved in that. I think we've got, we're in a lot better shape than we were at the last meeting, where basically it was doom and gloom. We're not gonna be able to come up with a solution. And so I'm personally very comfortable recommending this approach and adding to it the idea that the policy makers have at their disposal and potentially an ability to, I don't know what the right way to phrase it is, but pick a kind of proportionally lower inclusionary rate and a higher fee rate.
Right, it's not linked.
They're not linked.
I rely on you guys and the experts to say that they're not linked, and that helps erode some of the windfall that's been talked about. And the way I look at it too is, I think obviously city attorneys spend the most amount of time looking at this recommended solution as the most legally supportive. What we talked about earlier today is probably a little more risky. The fact that the on-site is actually in lieu, but potentially defensible. And I think this third one is, to me, seems the highest legal risk. But maybe we can capture that windfall through a higher fee, John.
I think just to note as well, and just a process one, that the TAC, well, it's obviously ideal to come to consensus on issues, doesn't need to. And so you're providing comments under the legislation on our recommendation, as we did marginally in the first round of recommendations. We can certainly provide different opinions in a final report regarding different proposals.
And could we hold off a little bit longer on what we should do, and just I kind of want to hear from more people about what their reaction to the general proposal or proposals are at this point, and then let's come back to like what's the recommendation or not.
Can I ask a math question? Is it true that if, as Eric was talking about, if the on-site percentage is X and the fee is X plus some percentage, that that will get at this value recapture question? I mean, is it as simple as if there's a greater spread between those two financial impacts, that the result of the math would be a higher percentage of value recapture given the baseline assumptions that you all have made?
Can we be more specific? So let's use a specific example.
You were at 1.6.
Let's say you take, for a condo, you take, we're using 18 in your scenario?
17.
You take 17 on the inclusionary, and then for purpose of the density bonus, the fee is 20.
No, for the purpose of the fee for everybody.
The fee for everybody, thank you, is 28.
Right. 25.
You said 25. Would that...
You'd be capturing more, and if somebody for some reason decided to pay 28% in lieu and not get density bonus units, they'd be giving up. Either the seller would be giving up land value. It implies the seller would be giving up land value, or the developer would be giving up profit.
Yeah, I mean, so just to be clear, if you are not taking a density bonus, you are probably financially disincented to pay the in lieu
fee.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Right.
And that's that. And that is a policy.
That is a policy.
And there's a. Because we haven't done the exact analysis, there's a point at which you set the fee premium high enough that it disincentivizes taking up the density bonus.
Correct.
Too.
Right.
And then you get fewer market rate units and fewer affordable units.
Which may happen in the beginning anyway. I mean, Jesse made the point, I think, two meetings ago of a lot of deals have been negotiated already, so that in the next 2 to 3 years, this may not be worked into the market pricing anyway, because you've worked with neighborhood, you've done your pro forma, you're not going to go back and say, oh, by the way, you know what, we're going to do something totally different, because then you're going to have to go back through your neighborhood process, which is costly to you as well.
So where does that lead you, Emily? What do you think the right solution is?
I would start lower and build up through fees. I'd actually be curious to hear from Olson where your are you using the fees that you're getting for off-site development? Are you?
We're definitely using them. We have a very, very long pipeline of projects that need the fee. So that's not a concern of mine. I think the one concern of mine in terms of the creation of the incentive is really on the super luxury condos and the whole notion of allowing them to fee out because of the question of the HOAs and the sustainability of those condos for...
You're saying on-site doesn't work well?
Well, we did the numbers for 181 Fremont, right? And those units started at $2.5 million, and we figured out based upon the HOAs that we'd have to sell them for around $50,000 to make them affordable.
Yeah.
So that I don't think it works really, really well. And when you have an HOA that's such a high percentage of your housing costs, and that goes up 10%. Because they want to have a certain wine cellar in that building because they're entitled to that, it's going to make it very, very hard for that homeowner to stay.
What fee do they pay? I forgot.
Well, I think they started their HOAs at over a...
No, I mean their in-lieu fee. What was their in-lieu fee?
$1.1 million a door. That's,
what does that translate to?
I'm not sure what
28%
percentage...
There was 40 something units.
Yeah, and their on site was going to be,
I think. Really the other way, if you're getting 1.1 million of fee,
okay,
you can build two units somewhere else.
Right.
I guess what is interesting in that is if you're getting 1.1 million per door in fee,
right,
you can go build two units somewhere else that might...
But I think Olson's point is you don't want the inclusionary fee to be so high that developers decide, what the hell, I'm just going to
put them
on site. Because,
for the luxury.
For the luxury.
But I guess what's that? I guess maybe if we start lower and build up, we have flexibility to support
and
more units elsewhere in the market.
Okay, can you hang on, John? I just want to make sure everybody else has a chance to jump. Dan or Terrence, did either of you want to weigh in?
I mean, I was just going to complete my statement. I actually think it's a relatively elegant solution. When I was at the mayor's office, there's always this debate. Do we want, competing goods. I mean, on-site units are good. Fees are good, too. I mean, the mayor's office of housing uses fees really wisely and creates a lot of good development through that. So there's something just about having a both-and scenario where a project could reduce both units on-site, which creates inclusive communities, and kick off a little cash that maybe would come to my project. That sounds lovely. And so if there's a way to get at this value capture question that mitigates an obvious deficit to this proposal from a math point of view, it seems like an elegant solution. That was my point.
Whitney, did you want to say anything?
Just in that spirit, if we're headed towards that approach, then obviously we want to set that the equivalent fee as high as possible.
Lydia?
Yeah, I agree. I just think whoever thought this up is brilliant. So I think it solves a lot of the problems. So we're talking about, I think, a slightly higher fee makes some sense, but I just want to nobody wants to hear this, but I just remember that, the rental underwriting, as far as I'm concerned, was super, super aggressive to begin with, and it hasn't gotten any better. So that's the first thing. So I'm not convinced that the 74% is actually real. The second is whether you take John's proposal or you take this proposal, the argument about land kind of moving to market, whatever that is, it's the same argument either way. Whether you start from up and go down, you start down, you go up. The land will move to wherever it's going to move to. So I'm not sure that I completely buy that. And the other thing I would just say, this proposal, when we talked about it last month, I was I don't know, maybe I've just been developing too long in San Francisco, but I all of a sudden found myself in a community meeting talking about why I wasn't going to take the density bonus and be, you know, lambasted on one side. Aren't you in favor of more affordable housing at the same time that the neighbors are saying, you really can't add another three stories if we're not going to let you do that? And just being in the middle of the most hellacious San Francisco entitlement ever. And I just think that starting up and going down practically would be terrible.
So what do you mean starting up and going down?
At 25.
John's acquiring a higher number but then lowering it.
Yeah, because you'll just get it from all sides then. It'll be even worse than it is. Yeah.
Well, I think it could give off the perception that somebody's trying to get out of
exactly.
something. And I think that's
okay, I told John to go next.
All right.
Okay.
Olson raised two things that are important and I wanted to comment on. One is, for us, from our point of view, what's a really important objective of all the inclusionary housing is actually to produce the middle income product, since we don't have any other program in town to do it. And so the problem with people feeing out instead of providing actual units is that doesn't happen. We do not want to maximize fee outs in general. I'll talk about the luxury high rises in a minute. But in general, we don't want to incentivizing or in this proposal, you know, basically the only practical option is to fee out. We need middle income units until we have some other method to do it, actually, we would prefer to see that produced than fee outs. The second point, specifically about the luxury high-rises, what I have here to hand out when you finally get around to it, is our comprehensive package. We're looking at the same information, of course, from all these analyses that all of you are, and we've come up with a package of recommendations for what to set and how to do it.
You can hand it out now if you'd like.
Okay. I don't know if I enough here for everybody. There's enough here for all the folks at the table. And that is to have tiers of inclusionary requirements so that for a mid-rise, it's higher than for the basic under, you know, nine-story or under. And if it's a high-rise over 300 feet, to have an even higher tier requirement than that. We know from experience, because we have negotiated with quite a few luxury high-rise developers, we've made deals with these guys, that they do, they are definitely willing to fee out. If that is more cost effective for them, and in this kind of system it would be, it would work. That's where you said, well, you just said you want a middle income unit, so I understand, but Olson described the problem of luxury high-rise affordable units are, you know, don't work well due to the HOA fee problem in particular. And so there we actually would have, with a high requirement, recapture that in that manner.
John, one of the ways of solving the middle income question is trying to, you know, and this is the hard thing that we all grapple with, is what's the right income to be middle income given where the typical HOAs are to make it sustainable.
Oops.
And you know, is it at the 80%, you know, home ownership level, which I don't think is probably the right one.
Mm-hmm.
But where is that sort of tier? Because I think some of these analyses have been looking at tiers that are marginally, you know, sort of feasible for those homeowners. And clearly, if it was a slightly higher income target, it would be much more comfortable for those BMR home buyers, and potentially we can get more units.
Well, in our package for rental, we define middle income units as an average of 100% of median. Mm-hmm. Now, that means in a different project, some of the rentals could be lower, some could be higher than 100, but they would average out, right? And for the ownership product, then we have picked an average of 120% of median. So if the top end of the range, which in Prop K, you know, our Prop K city policy would be, what, 140 or 150?
150.
you know. But then, you know, if there are commensurate, or there'd be enough written down, you know, to average out at 120.
Can I jump in with just a clarification? Do you all know what the average is in the, like, the Prop C 40-80-40 split that you assume?
I don't know. What?
The average rental income.
The weighted average of if you have units at 80% and units at 120%, what's your weighted average affordability level for the affordable units? You can't do that in your head. Okay.
I mean, we can. We'd have to back into it. We have to see what the income level is and then equate it to the AMI level. We have gaps.
Yeah.
So it's 60
level. Okay. Number. All right. So other, what, any other suggestions or thoughts about this?
I just have a question. In a tiered fee system, as long as it's applied across the board, mm-hmm. for density bonus or no density bonus, mm-hmm. nothing prohibits a tiered fee system, right?
What do you mean by tiered fee system?
Two different fee systems.
For different, based
different for construction types.
I'm just purely looking at the legal challenges for the density bonus program. You know, we're trying to say this is a fee program. And
all those ranges are equivalencies. They're economic equivalencies. Right.
We could have two fees, and that doesn't violate.
Oh, you're talking about the tiered fee.
That doesn't violate. If we decide to have two fees, it doesn't violate the state density bonus program.
It doesn't have anything to do with the state.
Right. Yeah. Fee, we can set whatever fees.
But I think if it's an
ten
impact
fees that we want.
If it's an impact fee,
I know, but I just wanted to understand.
But actually, Dan has a point that's relevant here. And Sarah, were you going to say the same thing? Or?
I was, and then I have a question.
Okay.
Well, an impact fee has to be based on a nexus. There has to be an impact. And so you'd have to find that the tiering would have to be related to differentials of impact rather than differentials of construction time. So I don't think you could just say...
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. But that has nothing to do with the state density program.
So as long as you have a nexus supporting it, you could do it.
But we did talk a little bit about this in terms of construction type versus neighborhood. And we had this conversation.
I'm a little frustrated that we're now, like, we've gone through however many months of process, and at least with the first round recommendations, it appeared that it was general consensus to pass along sort of these basic parameters. And the advice we got from Rick early on was, from the scan of best practices, was very difficult to do a lot of slicing and dicing and targeting and various different axes, whether it's neighborhood or construction type. And I thought as a group, maybe I'm wrong, John, to send forward kind of a simple structure. Now it just feels like this is almost starting the conversation all over again, in my opinion.
Well, we're just moving to the legislative process.
Well, we're not in the legislative process yet. We're being asked to forward some thinking from a technical panel to the legislative process. I don't disagree that this might be very much the subject of the legislative discussion.
I'm pretty sure the legislative process starts next Tuesday.
We're trying to make recommendations to inform that process, and I'm sort of calling a process foul on this, with all due respect.
Well, let's just wrap up our work and head on off to the board chambers.
Okay, that seems like a reasonable
option. I'm thrilled to do that.
Sarah, did you have something you wanted to add?
I just had a question at the controller. There was something out here that and it may be a meeting I missed. There's a note here that says the controller made clear that the fees need to be increased to be equivalent to the cost of building on-site units, and I assume that means by project type. Is that a recommendation the controller made?
That's not a recommendation.
Thanks.
Fernando, did you have a...
Yeah, if TAC members are kind of... We're done with the round. Maybe this is a good moment to kind of open up more broadly to staff and members of the public, and with that, for
So Prop C brought us from 12% where we were at the beginning of June to 25%. So I'm looking here at option 3, and I'm dividing 17 EMR units into 135 total units. And I think it's going to be a little hard to say to the public that at the end of this process, what you end up with is 12% on-site units. That's what, plus some fee. Right? But that's what this is resulting in. And, you know, just to be clear, that's how folks are going to read this. At the end of the process, if you take a density bonus, you end up with if you're doing 17%, let's say, for rentals, close to 12%. Any kind of tone. So that's just an initial thing. And that's, I know that you all aren't necessarily talking about the politics of how the public is going to read this, but I think it's something to keep in mind.
I just want to clarify. I clarify one thing? But isn't the general policy somebody could elect not to do any inclusionary units and write a big fat check?
Let's say that is
right.
That is correct. That is your other option. The other thing I think that comes from that is, you know, that I think you raised, Rick, you can't really anticipate that folks will take the density bonus. Cities have done this very differently in different places in California. San Francisco, historically, we never took a state density bonus. We did SUDs where something like that came from. West Hollywood and Santa Monica assume that you will take a density bonus with your required inclusionary housing. So those are just saying other cities have done this. Now, they didn't go up to 25%. That's a different story. But they do assume that the density bonus comes along with your on-site inclusion. I think the question that was raised about, you know, the difficulties around selling to neighbors this idea of a density bonus, I think that this process maybe provides you with a unique opportunity to get folks from the progressive to the moderate side of the aisle at the Board of Supervisors to say, we are going to pass recommendations for inclusionary zoning that accept that all projects from here on out are going to take the state density bonus, because it's the law. And that is the law, neighbors. It might not be the version that the planning department wanted to do, but it is a version, right? And I think that starts to set a new narrative about what a density bonus looks like in San Francisco. And then the last point, I think, around the value capture round and kind of these fees for different heights, again, thinking about the density bonus, a 35% density bonus is a 40-foot building going to a 50-foot building. Extra floor. You get a few more units. It's also a 300-foot building going to a 400-foot building. And that's a big difference. That's not, you know, an extra floor. And so I think it's really critical as you all look at, and I think you are right that the controller did not recommend, but you did have a table that showed the differential of how much fee could be, or how much incentive there was to fee out the taller the building was by different construction types. And so I think that's a really important thing for folks to come back on and emphasize to the legislative process about how you deal with that.
Other members of the public or staff that would like to comment?
I would just say that I like Dan's word that this is an elegant solution.
Okay, Ken?
I just want to, and this may be more appropriate coming from John, again, from the staff perspective, reiterate that we do not believe that anywhere close to all the projects will take the density bonus. This is something we've been worried about for a long time, and we're needing a solution that takes that fact into account. And let's make it clear that the density bonus is the law. That doesn't mean it is the law that you must take the density bonus, but I think it's kind of what Fernando was implying. Those are two different things. We must grant it. The developer is not required to take it or to ask for it. I don't know if you want to weigh in, John, but I think my experience is pretty clear on this.
I would just say it varies greatly. It's just the recent experience. I mean, for a long time, we didn't believe we weren't subject to it. That was struck down in court in the state. The recent state law has reinforced that we need to make it available to developers. So for at least the last 6 months, if not the last year, it's been pretty clear that it's been available. I think there are three projects that have proposed, and one has been approved. What I will say is that I think the issue is not whether projects get appealed or whether they go to court. The issue is actually what happens before they get entitled. When I say the issue, I mean the point at which projects are reduced in size through negotiation with neighbors. And so whether or not a project takes a density bonus or not, it is very often the case that projects get smaller before they get to the planning. I think everyone can agree with that, right?
No.
Yeah, well, John, I don't know that you're involved in every single project in the city, but I am, or the department is, and it is very often the case that projects get smaller before they get to the planning commission through negotiations with neighbors.
In well-to-do neighborhoods, that's certainly true. In other neighborhoods, much less so.
No. Oh, okay.
Rich people can afford attorneys to sue.
Other folks cannot. I'm not talking about lawsuits. That's my point.
Well, but that's
few lawsuits compared to the number of
projects. But that's the threat.
The issue is what happens before entitlement. And projects quite frequently get smaller before they get to the planning commission. So even if they use the bonus, it is highly unlikely, in my opinion, that most of them will use the full bonus. So there's likely to be some hybrid there, right? We can't assume the maximum bonus or no bonus. There's a lot in between. In fact, several of the projects that have been acquired to us have said, we want 4 more units out of 100 or something. I mean, really, it's simply because of the weird density limits in some parts of the city, they're looking just to get a couple more units out of it. So I would just put that on the table. Look, I believe we will likely, because of all the publicity, because of this process, we will probably see more projects use the density limits. I think that's probably true. Whether it's the vast majority of projects is what I'm questioning.
Well, this analysis actually considered that question and concluded, about 60% of the bonus might get utilized, if I remember your analysis correctly, you know, on average. This group, you did your analysis of the likelihood to use the bonus. It was two or three meetings
this
ago.
This group?
The consultant team. The consultant team looked at the likelihood of using the bonus.
60% of the projects had gone between 90 and 100% of their total density possibilities.
Current.
Yeah.
Current.
And
that's telling it. That makes John's point.
Well, so 60-90%, you're right. They won't all use the bonus. And if they kick them into a new construction type, there's a break point. We know that. I mean, we understand that. But it's still the general, the principles hold. Rates adjust, accordingly.
Other staff or members of the public want to comment?
Yeah, just to say it out loud. In the situation with option 3, where the extra fees are applied to the actual bonus units, mm-hmm. I imagine those are always going to be based on the percentage of density bonus that's actually taken. So if it's 10% bonus, the same fees are applied.
Exactly, yes.
And then this 80% of value recapture, this is assuming that, by my understanding, it's assuming that there's no additional value to those extra bonus units if they're market rate units as well.
No, it's not assuming that there's no, I'll try to understand, but it's not assuming that there's no additional value. It's assuming that some portion of the additional value has been captured by the city in the form of the fee.
Of the fee, okay.
And the remainder would go to the developer or the landowner as additional profit or additional sales price on the land.
Okay.
And 80% is probably a very rough estimate. Yeah.
Just one last question, just to clarify, I think I know the answer, but when you talk about 80% value, it's just the 80% value on those density bonuses. We've still captured 100% of the value on the
base units.
Is that correct? Or is it 80% of value on the whole project?
The first part is correct. We don't know what percentage of there's not a meaning to what percentage of the value we've captured on the base project.
Right, but if it's in with your feasibility range, right. Theoretically it's somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, so is that
you want to clarify? Well, to get the best of those units, you fulfill the on-site requirement.
That's what I was referring to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
I'd also say, in the interest of people making a recommendation to the legislators, we do have a middle-income local affordable housing bonus program, which does have a higher inclusionary percentage that's specifically supposed to create middle-income units. So, in terms of kicking it around here continuously, knowing this is just a recommendation and there's other legislation out there.
One of the fundamental, profound changes we're making to our law is to allow for middle income on site. That's not to be ignored, right?
Yeah, that's
it. Till now, we've never had middle income on site.
Okay, and no other comments from the staff or public?
For the record, we don't always make money as developers. We lose money as often as we make money. So it's not always this recapture.
Yes, sorry.
The landlord.
The landlord is making
money. The public won't like that overall percentage going from 5%. Are you saying that the $3 million? Fernando was saying that the public is not going to accept that the percentage has gone back to down to 12% on site because that's what goes along with the state bonus program. Mm-hmm. But that's ignoring completely the fee that it's going to go into this cover. So I guess there's extra bonus and how much could be the launch back to.
People vote on the site. Nobody in any public meeting ever says we want more fee to build more low income affordable housing. Like it if they have someone that says, you know,
Dan will accept you.
I remember the public. Okay, I want to transition into the what should we do about it now part of the conversation, and I just want to look at the last slide. We had three recommendations that we would like to suggest that the TAC vote on, or at least that we straw poll people on as we did before. We don't need the TAC to agree to any of these things or to endorse any of these recommendations. The controller's office is making a report, and they'll include in the report a sense of the position of the TAC on these issues, and hopefully an accurate sense. So, but like we did last time, if there's a way to reword these that can get us to something approaching consensus, I think that's more useful to the policymakers than if we merely report a diversity of opinion. So I want to start with the first one, but have you see all three of them. And actually, I'm going to mention all three and then come back to the first one. So the first one is that we set the fee option based on those ranges that we discussed earlier. The second is that we allow the fee on the density bonus units, as we've been discussing. And the third is that we ask the controller's office and the TAC to reconvene in 3 years and to revisit the question of how much has the density bonus been utilized. And, you know, if it's being fully utilized by every project, we'd have a different situation than, you know, if it's not being used at all. So let me start back with the first one. Is there any discussion first off on reservations about setting the fee range the way we've described them? Are people generally comfortable with that? And then I want to go around and ask you to yes or no. But
if I'm remembering correctly, these ranges associate directly with the ranges for the on-site units. And so
correct.
Part of the conversation was if there was actually a differential where the fee was a bigger hit, it would incentivize choosing the on-site and would probably recapture a greater portion of the value add given the differential. So it seems like something in our recommendation should be reflective of that. What I heard some consensus around there being this differential. Now, I don't know.
Do you want to suggest specific language, or does someone else want to?
I just want to be clear, though. That is a break from the way the fee has traditionally been calculated, though, right? I mean, hasn't the fee traditionally be calculated to be the equivalent of an on-site?
No.
Okay. It probably was at one point in the past, but the two lost touch pretty significantly over the years. So.
Okay.
The current economic rationale for the fee is based on the cost of construction, and the fee is intended to roughly approximate the gap between what it costs to build essentially a market rate condo and what that unit would sell for as a BMR unit. That's the, and then the percentage differential is essentially arbitrary. So the you have to do 12% on-site and 20% off-site there's no history of economic rationale for that differential.
But we're reestablishing the relationship.
We've established a relationship
based on the 2016 fees. So the fees,
exactly.
Based on the yes.
If the fee amounts go up, then we're out of whack again.
Does it make sense? I've understood the comment, and I understand where Rick is going on this. Does it make sense for us to note this discussion within the report, as opposed to make it a recommendation from the committee? I think we've talked about a trade-off, as I've understood the back and forth on the conversation, between if you establish the fee at higher than equivalency levels, it will enable you to have greater value capture on certain projects, but it may create policy disadvantageous choices for certain kinds of projects that don't. And maybe that trade-off is worth noting for policymakers of the next set in the process.
Can I just ask a clarification, maybe just because it's hard for me to hear some of the people. Is there any opinion that the fee should be taken higher than the controller's range?
No.
No.
We're all talking about differentiating within the controller's range. Is that correct?
No, I shouldn't speak for
it. I would say we never. My suggestion was that the fee option should be evaluated independent of an equivalence to the on-site. That's all.
As a policy tool.
As a policy tool. If we were, what my question was, did they have to be linked? Is the study forced us to link them? And the answer was no.
Right.
So I'm just simply saying.
But the range, I think, we'll see what the rest of the group.
I think the range is dependent on feasibility. Everything is a range of feasibility.
So I would, the implication of your point, Eric, is if we chose the high end of the on-site, high end of the range for on-site, then the corresponding fee might be higher than the highest fee in the currently proposed.
I'm asking if that's...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying to...
It's a more general comment.
Let me... The fees and the on-site are linked.
Yes.
The 14 to 18 exactly matches to the 18 to 23. They're equivalent. The ranges are equivalent.
Yes.
Well, maybe what I was going to suggest, I mean, I think, Ben, your comment could be a good one, especially if we can't reach consensus, just to note the conversation, though we might have a harder time reaching consensus on these fee options if they do exactly as you say, which they correspond directly to, so we may not be as in agreement as we might otherwise be. Leaving aside the particular policy permutations for these high-rise developments, which I think even if there is a fee differential, they will tend to fee out just because their upside differential is even greater than what we would consider here. So I don't feel like it's that problematic, but if it reads, should the city set a fee option that provides incentive to choose the on-site option and captures a greater portion of the value of the density bonus units or some fee, such, but not mention a range. And so that would then allow the range recommendation that we've made for on-site to stand.
Yep.
The policymakers could
right.
choose low or choose high, but all we've said is then provide some sort of differential which provides an incentive to choose the on-site option, which tends to be what community members want, and gets at this value recapture. But then debate what that number actually is.
So it's a policy recommendation.
Correct, and we avoid...
But just to clear, from a technical standpoint, we're saying, from looking at the numbers, the range that's before us in one is sort of accepted as equivalent to the inclusionary percentages.
I think then I would then the clarification is, oh, by the way, here are the ranges that match those on-site ranges. You know, you could still provide that as an informational point, but we wouldn't take a position on that. We would only be taking a position on the relative.
Well, we took a position on the inclusionary numbers, like the 14, 18, right, and the 17. I'm comfortable taking a position on the fees because they're kind of equivalent to those numbers.
I guess my only concern would be, and as per Ken's comment, is if some of us might want to, I'll just think this out loud. Some of us might want the policymakers to take the high end of the on-site fee.
Right. And then you're pushing beyond the high end.
And
of
then
the fee.
But we would still want this differential to incentivize on-site and to recapture the value. And so we're in a bit of a contradiction.
Well, but I'm sure at that point, if that debate's happening at the board, the controller's office, through their consultants, can weigh in on what the additional fee might be.
Well,
personally, I just would say, though, because I think this came up before in the discussion around what recommendation we're forwarding on the range of inclusionary percentages. I'm very uncomfortable with the top end of the range of these fees as a feasible fee percentage in this, especially given that we're talking about 5.5% increases. So just to refer back to the first round, my position was I'm much more comfortable at 16 on rental. I can't remember what the equivalent middle is for sale, maybe 18 and a half or something for condo. But I would be much more in the middle of this range for fee personally, I think. And I've talked about this. I know Lydia and Eric have talked about this in the past. I feel like the consultant's analysis brings us to the razor's edge of feasibility. And we're already seeing rents declining, real rents declining. where I'm seeing construction costs continue to increase, although that hopefully will be a moment in time and things will get back down, because I know John believes that that's cyclical as well, and God willing it is, because I have a 15% budget bust on one of my projects right now. But for me personally, and I think there was maybe not a majority of the group, but certainly a vocal minority of the group saying, yes, we're more comfortable with the middle of the range, so I would want to somehow have this second phase recommendation at least present that as much as we want consensus.
We did that on the first round. Yeah. There was general consensus on the range in the group, and we noted in the final report differing opinions among the TAC members about where you thought yeah. within that range.
So personally, I'd like that note again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. John?
Our bias is the opposite. We really want to that the lower the fee, of course, the more projects will fee out and the fewer that will build on site. And our bias is to get, except for the luxury high end, to get units built, not feed out. So there, of course, the higher the fee compared to the on-site, the more likely you are to get built out. So that's the way we approach it. And then because the method of our package is different, where we start high, assuming you use all the bonus and then step down to a base level of no bonus, we obviously would have high. We have higher fee out numbers. And Fernando, what are the higher? I want to be sure I get those numbers right. What are they?
I think we were ending up with
23 for rental,
28 for condo.
Those are the highest. That's the top of the range.
So that's where we came down.
Okay, so we disagree. We're in the range. Where to be in the range? We are already on the range. So I want to move that question then, and let's just quickly take a vote on this first recommendation that we would be the fee would be somewhere in that range, and we will, as you said, note that there was disagreement about where in that range.
And we're going to note that it doesn't need to be tied to the on-site.
Note the this conversation
yeah.
about that.
We'll have a, I mean, that'll be a little bit more subtle towards
tax,
it. Yeah.
Tax policy supported, consideration. Yeah. Tax supported and not being tied exactly for economic purposes.
Okay, all in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed?
Wait, sorry. I would like to be able to accurately reflect the opinion yeah. of the tax
counts.
It would be helpful to know.
Seven, yes. One no, or are you abstaining?
I don't know what the proper term. It's hard for me to vote on any piece when, in fact, you know, it's all about the package in the end.
And yet you have to.
No.
So you abstain.
There is an abstention. That's an abstention. It sounds like an abstention.
You know.
Okay. So let's move on. The next question is the approach to the density bonus. And I'd love to hear if people have suggestions about how to change the wording on it, but the idea is that we would allow projects to pay the fee on the bonus units and provide the on-site for the base units. And comments on that before we vote on it?
The fee as we've now adopted or recommended it in general would apply to all units, whether they be base or bonus.
Right. I'm sorry, I should have reread the wording specifically. So the reason it's worded that way is that actually this isn't a change in the current law. The current law actually says everybody who builds a residential project has to pay the fee,
right.
and
right.
it doesn't say anything about the density right. bonus.
We don't need to say anything about it.
Yeah. We don't actually have to take, we would have to take action to say we want something different for the bonus units.
I think we should even stop talking about a fee for the bonus units.
It should just
be clear there's a fee for all units.
Right? I'd just say, you know, should the current policy of applying the fee to all units
Continue.
Yes.
Including density.
I would even do that. So continue the current policy of.
Briefly, before we call the question, Fernando, we should take public comment if there's interest.
Sure. Just for clarification, you're saying that is the current policy is the fees. Housing fees apply to the bonus units. I'm wondering if somebody here in the room knows if the project was approved in December, did that project have housing fees applied to their bonus units?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good to know.
Well, the problem with approaching the question this way is, of course, the fee should apply to all units, you know, as a general theory. But, of course, it's dramatically different if that's all you propose to deal with the bonus units, right? If that's the only way you propose to deal with the bonus units, then for us, the answer is no. If you ask it as a theory, should a fee apply to every unit? Yeah, sure. I mean, every, of course, that's how you would calculate any fee in any scenario.
So this is a weird question, John, but can you add wording to it so that you can clearly vote no?
Or an alternate way to ask it would be, is there a second thought that's above and beyond this that you'd like us to kind of consider?
Because I agree, this is a little bit,
we should remove this question.
Vague.
Well, just saying the fee should apply to all units is, you know, like saying, does the sun come up in the morning?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, that's not the question.
Yeah, okay.
You've asked the wrong question.
Just remove the
So let me just push back on Eric's suggestion we just remove it entirely. I feel like if we don't address it in the report, we can address it in the report without a recommendation, but I feel like we have to indicate that we have come to this point and there's a discussion.
I mean, your proposal is that the bonus should be addressed by simply applying the current law, which is that the fee applies to all units.
Yes.
Then that is your answer to the bonus problem. All right. And you put it that way, and of course we vote no. It's not good enough. And if you think it's good enough, you vote yes.
But aren't we asking for trouble by even doing that? Right now, what I understand what you've all told me is, we are in compliance with the law by assessing a fee to all units. Mm-hmm. What we cannot do is require the density bonus units to be on site. Therefore, they have to fee out.
Well,
so we don't have to vote on anything. We are completely in compliance with the law. All we're just stating is...
I think we want to make explicit.
I think many of us think it's an elegant solution given the legal framework.
It's not a solution, it's the law. We're following the law.
But we're
not changing.
But
we need something.
But we could have something to...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let me try wording. So. This should the city allow projects that are utilizing the state density bonus to combine provision of on-site units with payment of the fee for bonus units?
Good.
Well, you mean...
You can vote no. I just want to know,
on-site units for the base portion of the project, not the entire project.
Yeah.
That's what you really mean. Okay. So you got to be clear.
On-site for the base units, fee
for the base portion of the project and pay and only fee out or whatever you want to call it. The bonus units. Yes.
Okay, so that's a clear...
Is that a yes vote, John?
That's a clear statement.
No, I want it to be... Okay, so now, any other revisions to that? Let's vote on that.
Do you want to read it one time?
Yeah. The city should allow projects that are utilizing the state density bonus to combine provision of on-site units for the base portion of the project with payment of the fee for the bonus units. Or I should say bonus portion of the project.
Yeah.
Bonus portion.
So does that imply that you can only do the density bonus and fee out if you're doing on-site and you can't fee out for the entire building?
You don't get the density bonus.
That's the state law. It has to be on-site.
You got to do up to 12%. It's a sliding scale up to 12%.
Right. And down in the details, you're going to have to allow partial... Some combination.
You
might not maximize the density bonus.
Yeah.
So, but as far as this body is concerned, that captures it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All in favor?
She
said aye earlier.
Yeah, she kept saying yes.
She said yes.
And she's gone for good.
I don't know if you can vote for her.
She's coming back.
Here she comes. Okay, she's back. Just now.
I have a 14-year-old that's wondering about dinner, too.
You just voted to continue meeting until 10 tonight. Okay, so all in favor of that as refined?
Aye.
Sorry about that.
Is that six?
Six. Wait, raise your hands higher.
Six.
Six. Okay. Opposed? Two.
Okay. And let's note, if we can be noted, where the minority opinion, can that be stated for just our getting that right in our notes? That would be helpful for us to relay the thinking of the chat. I think I get it, but it would be helpful to help us kind of articulate.
You want
to
try it?
We have the counter proposal here, and
And so we could simply say that the two members, it's just fair to you, Whitney, that the two members who voted no prefer the counter proposal, and we can refer to it by the name here.
Sure. Yeah, and if you've got it, it's an attachment to them.
I'd like to ask if other people would object to, not in the resolution, but just in the narrative, indicating that there wasn't objection on the TAC to the idea that if you could require the on-site units.
I objected.
You objected. Then I won't say that.
It's the opt-out versus the opt-in, right? That's pretty much what's going on.
Yeah, well, a different legal interpretation could allow you to require on-site units.
Six is going with opt-in, two of them with opt-out.
What you're referring to, is a thought that someone goes to the state and gets clarification or change of the state that indeed says, yes, you can require the unit. So I think you're asking, Rick, if that happened or the law were interpreted differently, is there objection? I mean, could legally require the units from the density portion? You're asking if there's an objection.
That is what I'm trying to ask. Is that what you're objecting to?
No, I was objecting to the counter proposal, which is you start high and you go down.
Yeah, I am too.
Okay. But let me restate the way Ken did. If the legal determination were that you could require on-site units against the bonus at the same rate, that would be acceptable to people. There's no objection to that other than the possible legal objection.
Correct.
We're choosing to require fees because we are anticipating the legal objection.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
One's saying we'd rather have fees than units. If we could get units, that would be okay too.
In the same approach you outline methodologically where you take a certain equivalent percentage on the bonus units.
Yeah. Which
and
is
you build
it'd
them
just
on
be 14
site.
To 18 all
yeah,
the
we know
right.
we
what
know
is
that's
called?
Not.
We're calling applying the in lieu to the bonus.
Yeah.
Right? Which we talked about from day one.
Yeah.
We could do that. Okay. So and we don't need to say the vote on that, we'll just put it in there. Okay, so the last recommendation is, should we reconvene in 3 years and revisit this question? If you remember, the trailing legislation for Prop C said we should update the study every 3 years. And earlier, we all agreed that that was not often enough and also too often. But given the uncertainty around the density bonus specifically, the consulting team now feels that 3 years is actually a really good period of time to redo this whole logic. And but what we're not saying here is that that means the inclusionary requirement changes or that we're going to expect that at that point there's some complete reworking of it. Rather, we're revisiting this question about the density bonus at that point. And they could revisit anything, but comments on that?
Sounds good. 3 years.
Any other comments on that recommendation from the public?
Should the controller convene a TAC?
Oh, no. To
attack to be named later.
Attack. A-T-T-A-C.
Well, the question there is, can we all go out drinking together in the meantime? Because that'll be a Brown Act problem. So I just want to make
good point.
That's a really good point.
What's that?
Brown Act. We go drinking together.
It can be done. We can hang out together.
It's hard to round up five of us.
We don't like each other, though.
Yeah. You may only have 15 minutes.
Okay, so if we change it to A TAC.
The rest of us all drink together. Yeah. I don't know what
Knew it.
Okay, all in favor?
Raise your hands high.
Sure.
Oh, unanimous.
Okay.
Right, great.
Are there any other considerations here?
I guess you had a comment about timing of implementation.
I was about vesting, but yes, I think I mean, the record is clear from our earlier discussions around vesting. There's a history of the vesting in the context of the grant, but I don't think we need to belabor the point.
It's in the trailing legislation.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a pattern there. It's just wording it exactly is a little challenging.
I should mention that we have Supervisor Safai here. Thank you for joining, Supervisor.
Hi, everyone. I don't want to thank you. I just wanted to say that this is something that's very important to us in our district. The conversation about inclusionary housing as it pertains to families. And I appreciate all the work that you guys are doing in terms of getting the numbers and looking at the numbers and how it affects. We have about 400 or 500 units in the pipeline in our district for the first time in forever. So we're paying really close attention to this. We're looking at a lot of different options, and so we appreciate the work that you've done. So we're going to run with the ball along with some of our other colleagues. Hopefully we can get it right. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Ben, do you want to say anything about sort of the future? I mean, this is, are we excusing people for service, or what's the problem?
I think we've all enjoyed being together. In all seriousness, I should thank the consulting team, first of all. All of you. They've done fantastic work on this, and often with a lot of time pressure. So it's much appreciated by our shop. Ted, of course, for leading. And thank you to the TAC members. This has been a learning experience for our office in a part of the world we don't often get to visit, and so it's been enjoyable for us to know a little bit more. I think this is officially your last meeting as a TAC. I think there are questions, though, about others in the city have expressed some interest maybe in kind of reconvening a group in the not-too-distant future to review other related issues, and so you might be called back together by your respective sponsors, although it likely won't be with us.
We need your parental supervision.
But again, just really thank you to the TAC members, the consulting team, the members of the public staff that worked on this.
And again, big thanks to you, Ben.
And tomorrow.
With that, we're adjourned.
John, what happened to her? I don't know. She's like,
what
happened
to her?
I
don't
know.
In a taxi.
She kept
calling. I sat on it.
Oh, really? I got it. It's so bad.
It still works.
It's great that it can crack.
I didn't know you could do that.
It still works.
Hey,
Jesse. Got a drink?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to drag him along?
Yeah. Where are we going?
Summer Club.